I loved the most recent sign on 220 North Church sign up on the hill. And it said, there's a saying that goes, or if God is your co-pilot, swap seats. I love that. In other words, you're not co-laborers with God. You don't participate in your own salvation plan. In other words, you're just merely receptacles of God's grace. I like to take it even more extreme and think that we're more akin to the cargo on the back of God's plane, meaning we're not even in the cockpit of what's going on and what will happen. And that's good news. Just cut right to the chase. That's good news that God's in control and we're not, okay? That's really good news. And that's the precise good news that Jesus wants us to hear out of the gospel today. So in other words, you can tune it all out now in the next 12 minutes, because that is the punchline of this sermon, is that we're not in control. God is. God is the pilot. We are mere cargo on his UPS plane or van. Take the analogy, metaphor, anywhere you want to go. But that co-pilot thing, right? It's really hard to let go of, isn't it? Who made a plan to come to church today? Y'all did. I mean, you're here, right? I mean, you didn't just roll to church. Maybe some of you did. That'd be awesome. I'd love to see somebody rolling down 220 on the way to church. But you made a plan. You made a plan. Maybe you set an alarm clock. Maybe you slept through your alarm clock. Maybe you made you set the coffee, you know, before you went to bed. You got one of those fancy, cool coffee makers so that you could have two cups before you came to church. In other words, we make these plans every day. And we always constantly are wrestling through plans and in our lives. And we're worrying about, do we have the right plan for today, the right plan for tomorrow? Or is things going according to plan, right? It's part and parcel to our existence. And because we know, right, at the end of it, that all of our plans really don't usually work out. I don't think I'm busting anybody's bubbles. If I am, I'm really sorry. And I'll be happy to meet with you this week. But ultimately, right, we know that our plans don't really work out the way we think they're going to. Right? They just don't. I loved that TV show in the 1980s, The A-Team. Anybody remember that? Starred Mr. T and his like band of sort of renegade good guys. Well, Murdoch was Mr. T's right hand, and he was like the facilitator, the operations guy, and he had this line at the end of every show. Everybody remembers this. He goes, I love it when a plan comes together. And who doesn't love that? Again, you know, this is a human instinct to plan, and we love it when things fit together. We just know that they don't usually come together that well. This summer, I thought it was going to be the time that we were going to take the kids to the Cape Cod Canal. Always wanted to go up there and see this sort of man-made canal. It's called the Ditch. So if you're ever in Massachusetts, you can throw that parlance out and they'll think you're a local. Be like, I'm just going to go fishing on the ditch today. And they'll be like, ah, good. Celtics are playing tomorrow. Anyway, so anyway, then, I digress again. So anyway, I was like, this is going to be the perfect day to take the kids to the ditch. Weather looks fine, not too hot. It's 30 miles in the boat. We have just like a center console boat. It's not a big boat. And so we motored up there and we got to the ditch and we went through half of it. Because once you've seen a canal, you sort of see the canal. And so we turned around and we went back. And as we were coming back around and it opened up into the Buzzards Bay, we saw the fog, or the fog saw us. And then we felt the rain. And then we looked at each other and realized we had 30 miles to go in fog and rain. But I looked at the forecast and I made the plan. And so it's a good thing that the kids learned to use compasses that day, because we were totally fogged in the whole way back. And we had to sort of inch back. And the other good lesson of that day for the kids is the value of hot water, because we were freezing when we got done with that boat trip. Right. But there's an enduring lesson even of COVID, right, is that everything is up for grabs in our lives. We really don't know when the fog's going to come in, when the rain's going to start. We might check the weather or have like 800. I've got 4 weather apps on my phone too, just to make that planning story even more ridiculous. I've got 4. 2 of them I pay money for. And I checked before we went out. Nowhere did it say fog in there. Nowhere. So it just happens when we try to plan. We know this, right? What's that other saying? That God laughs when we plan. And this happens as much even in our own families, right? And this enters Jesus's super stark and very abrupt slamming of families in today's gospel. So did you hear that? Jesus says, you need to hate your father and mother, wife and children. Ugh, what is he getting at? Now, this is the part where you expect me to sort of water down the message a little bit. He's not really saying that. It's a translation issue. Well, he is saying that. He is saying that. And what he's trying to do is to get us to dislocate from everything. Okay? Jesus is looking at us to dislocate from everything. He is using a rhetorical strategy, though. So there is a little bit of good sort of Greek knowledge here that's helped. In the first century, it was common to use the phraseology hate as a way to say you have your priorities in disorder. You don't have things aligned properly, in other words. So it's a stark for us to say you hate your parents, but what he's really getting at is I need you to reorder your values, reorder your life. That's why he talks about possessions so much in this particular passage and all throughout the Gospel of Luke. It's a reordering, in other words. Not that he thinks that you really want to hate your family. There's a great way to understand this, Eugene Peterson's translation. He says, anyone who comes to me but refuses to let go of father, mother, spouse, children, brothers, sisters, yes, even one's own self, can't beat my disciples. So what Jesus is driving at is this letting go of the self, letting go of all things that we hold like idols, like attachment, letting go of college football, letting go of things that are fancy cars, letting go of our last names, in other words, letting go of everything to follow him. And the letting go is part and parcel to holding too tight to our plans. And if we hold too tight to our plans, we're not letting go of anything. And most of our plans and expectations revolve around our families and our own well-being and ambitions. So Jesus is just drilling deep into this knowledge of let go. If we had a variable message board above the altar, we now flash up, give up, surrender, let go, roll over, palms open, palms out. These are the things that Jesus is encouraging us to think about. Because Jesus then comes back to this planning idea, right? He keeps this metaphor going with the two parables of the builder and the king. And he simply says the truth, if you're going to build something, you make a plan, you create the budget, you acquire the materials, you get the drawings, and you set off. And if you're going to go to war, you do similarly. You create an army, you get ammunitions, you prepare the home front, and then you march off. The paradoxical relationship with Jesus is that in our planning to be his disciples, in our life with Jesus, it's nothing but to give up. Because he's the builder, the king, and the worker, all in one. He's the laborer, he's the pilot, and we are the sole benefit of his work. When Jesus goes to the cross and says it is finished, he means it. He means that our work is finished. We have been claimed as his forever. So we can stop trying to control. We can stop trying to predict. We can stop planning. Well, this gets pretty circular though, doesn't it? Because if you're like me, then you feel relief when you think about the gospel that way. When you think about Jesus as the king, the laborer, the builder, the savior of doing everything. It's like, deep breath. And then if you're like me, you look at your phone, look at your calendar for the week, and you begin to make your plans, right? And that fleeting moment is now gone, and you're knee-deep in, what time do I need to get up? Do I have enough snacks for the kids? Who's going to pick them up? I need to text, et cetera, et cetera, right? You instantly are knocked out of that. And then I find myself going back again. Now, maybe you all don't. I know some of you are far more sanctified than I am, but I definitely go like this all the time. And then I find myself saying, oh, I got to let go again. It was the reason why we talked about the Sabbath in adult ed a couple weeks ago, because I wanted to hear it. Sorry, selfish. Because I am about that. And it's a circular aspect, though, is our existence on earth. And the good news is that Jesus is all too familiar with these mercurial ways because he lived on earth. He lived, he walked in our shoes. And so he keeps coming to us with fresh grace and new mercies every single morning. After all, as we say in the prayer of humble access, his property is always to have mercy. And in this mercy, in this emptying, we slowly replace planning with presence. We replace planning with presence. We replace activity with receptivity. We allow God's plan then to take over our lives. We get off the ladder, off the treadmill, and we exit the world only to re-enter in the back of Jesus's UPS van. Now, don't hear these words as black and white or think, I can't let go of planning. I just got too much to do. We all feel that. I do. It's not condemnation. It doesn't mean that your relationship to God is somehow not at its, it needs to be optimized. It just means that you're human and being honest about your daily existence. But Jesus was human too. And so he knows us. And he knows that we go like this. And he goes like this with us. And the mystery of the incarnation is that Jesus, through the power of the Holy Spirit, follows us like that psalm that we read together. Like the great story of the runaway bunny, that wherever we go, God follows us, bringing us back to him over and over and over again. Recently, Frederick Buechner died, and I don't know his work that well, but I've been reading a little bit in the last couple of weeks. It's incredible. He's got a quote in his book, Now and Then. Listen to your life. See it for the fathomless mystery that it is, in the boredom and pain of it, no less than the excitement and gladness. Touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it. Because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments, and life itself is grace. Buechner goes on to say, pay attention to the moments when the unexpected tears come to your eyes and what may trigger them. David Brooks wrote a eulogy for him in the New York Times, and he says, Buechner talked about these sudden upswellings of emotion that we get from the sublime of nature or art. When we see a whale breaching or are emotionally ambushed by a line in a film or a poem, we are led towards truth and beauty by a lump in the throat. A lump in the throat. Great image. A great image. A lump in the throat, not a plan in the head, but a lump in the throat. I'll just share a personal story to close. Many of you all know that my mom suffers from a cruel, unrelenting disease of dementia. It's horrid, and it's one of the things about dementia is the effect on caregivers and loved ones. And a byproduct of this is that everybody becomes focused on planning all the time, you're planning days, and, future. You're just constantly focused on planning what to do, how to do it. how to walk in with a map that's never been written, never been mapped out. And so we lose a sense of presence in that. And enter my story, my son, George. This past week, we were preparing for school, and we were doing our normal sort of back and forth. You can imagine how chaotic it was. It's not nearly this smooth, but we had some great pears. And I was like, guys, you want some pears for breakfast? And George looked at us and goes, they call my mom Gaga. And George said, Gaga loves pears. Lump in the throat. Stopped me cold in the tracks. And we spent 10 minutes talking about how wherever we'd go, we'd drop the kids off and they're little. My mom would pop around the corner with a plate of pears. She loved pears. See, Jesus showed up right there for us that day. Jesus shows up right there every day for each one of us, giving us the lump in the throat and loving us and accepting us right where we are.